Yes, greetings in the name of the Most High. And it's kind of, you know, it's been not too energized this week as most weeks between Christmas and New Year's. There's this kind of optimism that the old year is going to be gone and the new year is coming in, and New Year's resolutions and a new start, new energy, new life, new happiness, and things like that. And that's been kind of canceled by the mind controllers. And just remember this, what they're doing is they're launching a full-out attack this week to make you think that, you know, there's this big lockdown, there's this big emergency. At least that's what they've attempted to do. And the purpose of that is to stop that New Year's optimism. You know, these people by now, if you don't realize it, you know, they are not just your enemy, but they are the enemy of humanity. They are the enemy of human. You know, this the people you see on TV, on various news channels that are talking up fear, they are your enemy, okay? They want you to be in fear, they want you to be unhealthy, and they want you to die. Now, how they got this sickness, how they became psychopaths, how they became, you know, basically cannonball fodder. I mean, they're good for nothing. That's all they're good for at this point is, you know, to be killed and placed in a heap of bodies and burned. That's basically what they're good for. That's all they're good for. And the reason is because they sold out to evil. Who knows what it was that bought them over? You know, it could have been, you know, just some perk, some knowing they'd be, thinking they'd be on the winning team, thinking that they would have more power, thinking they'd get ahead of you, exercising their disdain they've had of you their whole lives, because they've secretly been in this world, this hive. But these initiations, they go on mainly in teenage years. So when you're looking at that enemy, they've always probably they've always been your enemy. And you're just now noticing that, my God, there's no area of communication, because, you know, they don't only hate you. They hate all humanity or anyone that doesn't behave like them, and what they behave like is not human. You know, nobody that's human would want children locked down and masked and have their lives basically ruined by these procedures. They wouldn't do it. You know, be unhealthy toward kids, you know, hurt kids. But hurting kids is part of the sacraments of Satan, and basically in the only club that there is on earth is the hive. That's the only club you joined. The other club, there is another club, but you got to be chosen for that one. And it's not on your will, thank God. It's on another will besides your vanity will. You know, besides our little will. But in terms of this club, yeah, anyone can join. Everybody gets a chance to serve the devil. Everybody gets a chance to pay the devil his due. And he who pays the most gets the most perks. And this opportunity came along globally. They've been preparing this for years, and Obama said decades. Talk about a useless human being. There's a useless pile of garbage. Just, he's like, I look at Obama as the same level I look at McCain. Just useless, you know, totally useless. You know, useless, he hates humanity, hates himself, hates his fake kids. You know, hates his lie, hates his wife, hates everything. The only thing that keeps that guy going and people like him going is the idea there'll be a new world order that will hurt you. That will include him and them and exclude you and punish you. And that's what keeps these people going. That's their hope. That they really have no hope in terms of themselves. The only hope they have is that you're going to be hurt. And that's, you know, I've been saying that same thing for the whole time I've been broadcasting, and I've never had to change it. If anything, people talk to me, they just go, "You were so right. You were so right. You were so right." They really, truly hate us from the beginning. I said, "Yeah, it's part of the, it's a club. You know, and there are different degrees of the club, you know, just like different degrees of Freemasonry. You can get into these various degrees or join at different levels and then have different levels of acceptance. But there is an immediate acceptance that you've decided to forsake God and the world. You get a pop there for sure. You decide to give your life to Satan. That gives you a, you know, a feeling of belonging and, you know, the other people that are involved in that are all your friends. And, you know, that causes a young person to feel like they can go get a job at the used car lot and laugh just real good. You know, or anywhere where Satan's hiring. Come right on in. You're welcome. You're family. And what they're really doing is having a cabal of evil that, at the very top of it, is there to spill the blood of innocence. You don't know that yet, because you're just a dumb fuck that, you know, just joined something because looks like it's going to be the cool kids table. And turns out to be, you know, the actual doom of your soul, the actual end of you. In fact, you're already ended. And you've been ended for some years now. One wonders if you'll ever repent, or if it's possible for you to repent. That's another wondering thing. Can a person that's given their soul to the devil with his own free will, who's gone down that path of evil and done every evil thing imaginable, can that person be redeemed? Now, those people think, for some reason, they're not part of anything evil. And when they run their, you know, when you realize the witches and the witch queens are the head of it, and the head of the various social circles, and that those social circles have to perform acts which are called for by the central command in that particular circle. And there are millions of circles, obviously, around the world. And all these circles cooperate in one big hive circle, but yet nobody ever talks about anything because there's no real need, because all communication is psychic. There is no need for a lot of talk, especially about it, which they intend to keep secret, or at least confused, so people don't really know what they're talking about. They really don't know what they're talking. What are you talking about? Maybe you better go back and see the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the way it's run. You should know. You really should know more than you do. Do you want to find out? You got to go to a higher level. How are you going to do that? If I told you, I'd have to kill you. No, for real this time. Get it? You gotta kill somebody now. Oh, it could just be a setup, you know. A push into suicide. And pull the plug on the respirator. Something. You gotta do something. You gotta do. You ready? The hospitals are all ready. They've already done their deed. Those people were dancing and drinking and having orgies in the hallways while killing the patients. They were so high on the blood. You have no idea what kind of world you were born into. No idea. You're lucky there's a veil there so you can't see the plans they have to kill you. The plans they have to stab you in the back. The plans they have to destroy everything about you. Even though you think you're being cooperative. No, a lot of us would not want to be like you. But many of us have been you, exactly. But see, the thing about repentance is you can repent all day long. It's no guarantee. You know, God has to choose you out of a situation. I was lucky. I ran so long from God, even knowing God was God. And I finally gave up, and he was really there, and he caught me. But I was in real trouble, you know. I had, the devil was after me, I mean, big time. You know, I was mocking Satan, as I, you know, do. But, you know, my attitude of noncompliance was something they weren't going to put up with, you know, and so I was basically hunted. And then God took me, and, you know, all the hunters were all around us. And, you know, though it was very dangerous, and, you know, we eventually had poisonings and all kinds of bad things that happened in that first go of the Lord. Nobody put even a finger on us. And they couldn't. Why couldn't they put a finger on us? Here you go, sweet. Thank you. Why couldn't they put a finger on us? Because we had God's protection. Why did we flaunt it in front of them while they looked like they were seething and ready to kill? Because we knew we had God's protection. And we were trying to get them to repent by showing them how pathetic their position is. And they just kept on boasting how powerful they were. I realized in the future not to do things like that. God protected me because I definitely tempted the Lord. I didn't know that I tempted the Lord. You know, it's like going out on the freeway to play. You know what I mean? Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. I did. I got right in their face. And I'd been there before when I was a teenager and then hauled off. And after 7 lovely years of, you know, mind control programs and shrinks and drugs, incarceration, I finally saw the light. I was going to play the game and get out. I admitted there's no such thing as Satanism. That's all I had to do in my treatment, just admit there was no such thing as Satan. That's all I had to do. There were no people there. Nobody was conspiring. There is no gang stalking, for gosh sake. There is nothing like that. I was just sick. I was just sick. I was a sick boy. I just was sick and I really just wanted to remain a child. I didn't want to grow up and realize the whole world was run by these evil fucking pieces of shit pedophile. I didn't want to understand all that had happened and all the assaults and abuse. I didn't want to understand that when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. I didn't want to understand, you know, blood baptism. I didn't want to understand any of it. So I ran from it. Then I wanted to fight with it. I said, okay, if it's real, we're going to fight. So in a sense, I had to grow up to a certain point of view. You couldn't just be naive. You can't just think it's all a cartoon. I mean, although I wish I had. That would have been really funny. No, I knew they were real, and I knew they meant business, and ouch, it hurt the things they were doing to me. And the physical threats and the death threats. Boy, oh boy, was that awful. It was awful seeing people that were my friends, my good friends, peers I went to school with, turning on you like that. Wanting my change, I found. And I will. Looks like they ran out of their allotted. All right. Okay.
It doesn't say that we lost it. Say something, Donnie.
It's in low data map mode. We don't want it in low data mode.
I can't hear anything.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, now I do. Now I do.
Okay, so hopefully we're back. I'm just trying to get my phone out of low data mode here. Well, there it is.
Talking, John.
I'm going to keep talking, but we don't want low data mode. That's the thing.
Dax still has it, he says. Hear ya.
Okay, well, I'm going to continue, folks. And that was just a warm-up, you know. I just had done this documentary on society that our company is handling, I guess, but it wasn't my production. It was something one of our producers, Loris Kirchy, came up with. He's our man in Europe, and he had this idea to do this documentary about, kind of revolving around my story of society, how I wrote it under pretty much complete amnesia. In other words, I really believed it wasn't real. That's a lot of programming.
And yet you knew.
And yet I kind of knew, because I knew when I was writing it, it was naughty, you know, like I was hiding the screenplay, you know what I mean? I was afraid of it. I was going through a divorce at the time, and, you know, I was already called a psychotic in the divorce court. And, you know, my doctor that I had at the time was on these medication for panic attacks. And no more of the psycho drugs from the past, like, you know, that they did before. Now we're talking things like, you know, Effexor. What was I on? They have me on Tofranil, and I forget what the other name for that is, but it's like Zoloft. It's those kind of psychotropic drugs. And they have me on those, plus Xanax and a couple others. And, you know, and I still couldn't go out during the daytime. I was having these panic attacks, and I had to quit work. I was working in commercial real estate at the time, trying to be a good boy. You know, not go near anything like, you know, music or the arts in any way. Just coat and tie. See if I can get someone to love me and my family. Whatever. Anyway, so it didn't work out too well because I had the panic attacks. I had to quit. And I was, you know, then home. And then, of course, at that point, I enrolled in this screenwriting class because at night I could go out. I could drive the car. Couldn't drive the car during the day, but I could drive the car at night. So I went down there. I had to have something to do. You know what I mean? I was going crazy. So I drove down there at night, and I just got into it. You know what I mean? I was just, like, totally hooked on it. And Rick Fry was in that class, my co-writer in society, and he was really the one that kind of got the screenplay to the people to get it produced. So they wanted to know about how this screenplay came together, and there, what I learned in this remembering process of getting ready for the actual, my part of the documentary, and I wish I was, you know, younger, thinner. My mind is pretty sharp, but, you know, it's like the end of your lifetime confession type of thing, and it's weird, but, you know, here I am confessing this stuff and talking about it and remembering, when I was like a little kid, remembering all their satanic rituals and, you know, remembering, you know, all their orgies and their, you know, and then being abused, me and my brother, by people we, I don't know who they are. They're just, you know, all men. And, it's really, a sordid kind of thing. I mean, you know, and then remembering the night that they call the society party, which is where the movie begins, with the kid, Billy, whose name is really, in the script, is Bill, and how he picks up a butcher knife and holds all, you know, everyone's hiding in the house, they're hiding. And that's actually, you know, the way that the ritual was planned, is the first night there would be a party, and, you know, and here's your welcome back into society. Well, it wasn't, because it was, they'd already decided what to do with me at that point. That is, get rid of me. So that was kind of like showing off the sacrifice. And then the next day was the black night. It was the night of everything blackness, everything black, no cars, no this, no that. Everything set, the stage set for the black mass of murder. My murder. And what I did is I got this knife out of the... I realized there were people in the house hiding, because, I mean, it was, like, weird. All black and no lights and no sound and no cars and nothing. Like, no one lived there. Like the house had been abandoned for years. That's how black it was compared to the other houses on the block. And so I went in there, and then I realized I could hear people shuffling back in the master bedroom behind the door and other doors, and I went to these doors that were locked, and I went down to the kitchen. I got a knife, and I told them I would stick them, anybody. I would kill them if they tried to come at me. Now, through the door, I'm communicating this, and then outside and around the pool, and, you know, there's an apartment out there, and I told they were, there were people in there, too, hiding in there. I mean, everywhere. I was amazed I didn't get grabbed outside. And, but that's what they're going to do. They're going to grab me and they're going to kill me. I don't know what they were, you know, what level it would have been on, what kind of torture they had lined up, but, you know, Satan is like, they're like, the kinds of tortures they like are like, well, there's dismembering, there's, you know, drugging, and then, you know, keeping the corpse alive. Or it looks to me like they had one night to get it done, so they have a few hours to have some fun, but it might be drinking the blood, eating the heart. Who knows what the exact thing was, or you know, taking the corpse and sodomizing it, or pissing and defecating on it, or whatever they would do, whatever level of depravity they would get to. It doesn't really matter to me, because I think every avenue they have is stupid and silly and just shows them to be just gross, you know, just like non-people. So, you know, I held them off until the morning, and then I did fall off. I did nod off asleep just there for an hour or something, and the next thing I know, there were ambulance attendants that were carrying me out. And they had a court order to get rid of me and put me in a private psychiatric ICU. And I lived, folks. I survived it that night. And that was the whole night that society was kind of based on, the actual film. And that's what I didn't even know. I didn't even realize the detail, that level of detail, until I'd been really thinking about it, about the two nights, not one night, which was, by the way, New Year's, which was on a Saturday night. New Year's Eve was Saturday night. New Year's Day was the day of the sacrifice. Isn't that just how they work? And I don't need to know more than that. I don't need to go study it. I just need to tell you that that's what happened. And then from there, I eventually was shipped out of L.A. and gone. And a rumor spread around that I was dead. That rumor persisting down to today, in fact. I'm still dead. And so the producer, Lawrence Kirchy, he wanted to know about that story in more detail. And of course, you know, you have to see the documentary to really get the detail. And then all these other guys are going to be talking. And it's broken up into, I don't know, I know now there's like 8 people that'll be speaking. And some are at the very top of the horror, what do you want to call it? The horror genre, you know, people that... They have the magazine Fangoria, and they have shows on TV, you know, and I don't want to go into the roster just yet, but they talk about the film from different perspectives on why it became popular, but really why it persisted. And my opinion is the reason it persisted was because there was something secret in there, that it was actually a cursed movie. It was cursed in a way. I don't mean curse like a, you know, a negative curse. I just mean a curse like, you know, there's just something on it, you know. And it was that I did get a phone call when I was working on the script with Brian Usna, the director, of a woman that had apparently taught tennis at my mother's house, a house that they had gotten long after I was shipped out of L.A. And, she introduced herself and, you know, she said that she just read the script because she was helping out the casting director. I don't think she was working there. She was just helping her out. And she said it was all real. And went on about talking about Polaroids she had found of these various orgies and children and the whole bit. The whole fucking bit. And I went into the other room where Brian was. And basically explained to him what happened. And then he got upset. He didn't want to be responsible for me being going nuts. So I knew what I had to do to save the movie. I had to choke it down right there. And go back to my former programming, which is there's no such thing, and reject the phone call. I just pretended the phone call never happened. And then I never saw her again either, you know, around the film or casting. I think she ran away. I really don't know what happened to her, but she wasn't there. I never ran into her again. And so as far as I was concerned, I was, you know, there is no such thing. The film, while we were making it, I'm still thinking it's complete fiction.
Pretending.
Well, I'm pretending, but I'm also knowing that it's fiction. You know, after that phone call, I totally rejected that. It was another decade or so before I finally started acknowledging, you know, that the programming started breaking about 10 years later, even after that. And then finally I understood that all that was real, but not at the time of the movie or the movie's release. And so I think that is why the producer wanted to produce it, because he felt there was a real story there. And I go on, I'm asked all these questions by an interviewer in the documentary. And so I'm able to... you know, some of these are pointed questions and, you know, kind of challenging and, you know, making me really, you know, get clear and precise. And during the process, I had to get clear and precise because I had to really understand those 2 nights. That was such a, you know, the more I remembered it and the more that I focused on it, the more I became very clear that I had to even block some things out. And you know, anyway, it is what it is. And whatever happened, happened. I certainly wasn't looking for any sensationalism during the time of the film. I was basically told in so many words to shut up. You know, to don't go there. If you're going to talk to the press or anybody else, you don't talk about it like it's real. I wasn't told directly that. I was just given the cue. You know, the social cue. The cue stick up your ass, whatever. I was given the cue. And I obeyed. Gee, I'm sorry, I wasn't the hero. I obeyed because I was, I think I was scared to death of the size of this thing. Because you're talking about the society of being, you know, the majority of the world. The majority of the world. And nobody wanted me to say everything all the way, all you know, everything everywhere all the time. They wanted it to be over there, this family and this evil family over here. How about Howard Hughes? How about some of those Hollywood despots, huh? Those perverts over there. Hey, how about these guys? How about those Republicans that got involved in boys in right the Franklin cover up? Ted Gunderson. How about that? I knew Gunderson for a while. He was head of the FBI in L.A. during the time where my grandfather was kind of, you know, the boss, too. And I wondered if the two men ever knew each other. And the answer was no. So I didn't know what to make of Gunderson after that. That seems to be something he should have known. Anyway, be that as it may, there may be a question mark on him. I don't know. I just know that he was talking about things like the Franklin cover-up and, you know, ritual pedophilia and the idea that children were used in sacrifices. And that is exactly what I was trying to find out from him, if that was in his caseload, were there those kind of things? And yes, there were satanic crimes like that all over the city. No, all over the city at various times and various places, various people. So, I guess for a lot of the last few decades, we've been playing cat and mouse with this. But just know this, there is Satanism in the world. And they run the show, and they will offer anyone and everyone a way to get in, if you like. But, you know, you can get in, but if you want to get out, you're going to have to fight your way out. You know, it's like communism. You can get into communism through peace and love, but you're going to have to fight your way out of it with bullets. Okay? And I guess this generation here in America is going to have to find that lesson out. You guys can let this communism come in and take over, but you're going to find that, you know, if that's not what you want, and they get it done, only way you're getting out of it is through with a gun. And even then, there's no guarantee that you won't be caught. You try to warn people, but they don't listen. You know, I tried to warn people about Satan and Satanism and, like, this little thing in Beverly Hills. It could have been West Palm Beach. It could have been the Hamptons. It could have been New York. It could have been, you know, West L.A. It could have been, you know, Long Beach. It could have been, it doesn't have to be in some wealthy area, whatever, just that, the wealthy tend to be the most interesting in purveying the satanic program. But, so, the documentary is going to have a lot of people commenting about the film, and I think from an artistic perspective, why it was surrealistic. And I think, but eventually it's going to be a film about the haves versus the have-nots and class warfare. And it's going to be an eat-the-rich film meaning, you know, it's against the you know, it's going to be in the same category as They Live. But they're going to ask, why did it persist so long? Even more than They Live in some cases. And the reason it persisted so long, I mean, I keep thinking it's because it's cursed. Because what was happening to me as a writer when I was writing is something real happened on the page. Even though it was a black comedy, it was campy, had all this rubber in it, surrealistic rubber, and all this kind of artistic license, it still had the truth in it about the world and about the wealthy, you know, feeding off the poor. And because it became that way, I believe that's another reason it persisted so much. And I think, but I think this other thing of this curse, this buried crime, this horrible problem that happened, this the reality of it kind of, I think, made it persist too. About what they wanted to do. Anyway, looking forward into next year. I think next year that a lot of the people that have not been persecuted for Christ will experience that. I think they're really going to ramp up the anti-Christian rhetoric and you know, even to the point of like the unvaccinated are really Christians and that's it's really a Christian thing. I mean, you know, and I see that ramping up against Christ and also the ramping up against conservatives, as you've seen. People, conservative just means to me now someone that wants the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, somebody that wants the Republic of America to remain the Republic of America, not really liberal or Democrat, Republican. It's more, you know, somebody that wants to preserve the country versus someone that wants to overthrow it, like two extremes. So conservative would be those people, which would include liberals and conservatives, that would like to see the Republic continue versus those who want to overthrow it and destroy it. And also confiscate all the private property and the, you know, and kill people that disagree. It's really sad that it's gotten to this point. But 2022 is going to be the real, you know, clash point. It's going to be the real warfare point. It's going to be the real, they're going to ramp up like you've never seen before. And I'm just wondering if there will be Americans who will actually stand up to it. Or are they going to go along and sit down and comply and give their children over to the state for torture and prostitution? Yeah, well, that's what you have to do. If you comply, you give your children over. Well, you get the jab and you do all those things, but then you give your children over. There'll be no children and no private property by the end of 2022. There'll be a lot of children taken. So I just wonder, you know, again, it's going to come down to the same thing. When will you stand up? One guy standing up can do a lot of damage. I have done a lot of damage, you know, to their little world. And I didn't do it on purpose. I just was trying to, you know, fight for what was right, for my being a sovereign being that's to be respected and not to be violated. That's all I ever fought for, was to not be violated. Please don't rape me. Please don't hurt me. Please stop beating me. Please stop trying to kill me. That's all. I mean, it's sad that it has to get to that point where children are just begging to not be killed. Children are begging to not be hurt. Children are begging to not be violated. Children are begging to not be, you know, trafficked, groomed, and basically destroyed. Yeah, a society like that would not be one I'd want to live in. hence suicidal tendencies for me and my daughter. No, I didn't like it here very much. I didn't like America very much. Since all I could see, even in the 80s, was this. Satanism, coast to coast. Not the hedonism of, you know, television or the pop styles or the fact that everybody got real commercial and the 80s was the time of the me generation and making all that money. No, for me it was the, again, this continued fight against it. And yes, I, you know, while I got rid of some of these, you know, memories where I thought, no, that doesn't exist, I still felt the oppression from it. Even though in my programming in the 80s particularly, it doesn't exist, but I feel terrible. That's another part that I have to differentiate. Yes, it doesn't exist. Yes, there's no such thing. There couldn't be this organized. And a lot of it had to do with the organized gang stalking. I just didn't want to believe it. And even though I got to that point of I don't want to believe it, and I was coerced to that point, the trauma of that condition, of that situation, was still there. It was still attacking. Even though I tried to call it something else. Anyway, it turns out I was right the whole time. They were wrong the whole time. They were more evil than I thought they were the whole time. I was more innocent than I thought I was the whole time. And caused them a great consternation, which is basically, you know, what we need to get rid of this thing. I was really called a thing. Take that thing out of here. Take it back. Take that thing right out of here, says Eric Clapton in one of his early Cream songs. Take that thing right out of here. Now, I came to understand that song. I knew they were talking about, I mean, take that out of here. Doesn't know the secret sauce. The real way things work. How to be a big rock star. Get it out of here. Take it out. Kill it. Do whatever you got to do, but get rid of it. And then I guess after doing that song, one of his kids jumped out the window and killed himself. You see, nobody gets away with anything. That sentiment, take that thing out of here and kill it. The ultimate bullying. To make one feel as if they're not just not human, but they're subhuman, even though they try so hard to please you clowns. And all you can do is keep plotting for the destruction of that sentient being, a child, not even of age yet. So that's it, you know, until this situation clears up that I was talking about. You ain't going to see no NAS 2022 or 2023 or 2024 or forever. It's going to be really, really hard now. Because this time, your economy goes. And, you know, the reason it goes is because the public needs to understand this cannot be tolerated, this war on children. Can't you understand? I mean, can't anyone understand that? Let's call off the war on children and heal, huh? What war, Zeph? You sound crazy, Zeph. The war on innocence is what perpetuates, you know, the surge in Iraq, killing some 5 million children. And, you know, that's part of it, too. The killing in the third world. Here, I'll take it. No. Well, I don't know what to tell you there. I mean, you see, some of these problems are so intertwined in our society that, I mean, do you think, I'll put it back on you, do you think that in 2022 we're going to get rid of child trafficking? Satanic ritual abuse? Satanic sacrifices of children? You know, the grooming and orientating children to pedophilia rituals and clients? Johns? Do you think we're going to get rid of that? Okay. All right, guys. Quick word, and I'm out of here. I'm just, you know, I see two paths. One where a breakaway of people goes on one path to a, you know, a peaceful future. And another path where people stay on it to go into literal hell on earth. And that divide, you, if you want to call that my take on the rapture, go ahead. It's, but I see God having a path too for those who don't know anything about this, who don't participate, who are just here trying to live, God bless them, trying their best to see through this nightmare. And, you know, these people are going to be breaking away from civilization, from this. And the people who will remain are going to be here, not just because they're not good enough to go to another path. It may be that they're called because the spiritual gifts they have to wield those at a time such as this, and they have the courage to do it. But there will be people who can't take it, who won't be able to understand it or hack it. Peeled off in another direction. And with that, I give you shalom.